that's language rich by spending plenty of time talking, singing songs, and reading books will boost language skills immeasurably. But keep in mind that it's more important for your baby to know that a dog says woof, can bite and lick, has four legs, and has fur all over than to be able to recognize that the letters D-O-G spell dog. If your baby does show an interest in words, letters, or numbers, by all means, nurture that interest. But don't pass on the playground so you and your baby can spend all your time with a pile of flashcards or a tablet's worth of apps. Learning, whether it's how to recognize a letter or how to throw a ball, two things your baby can learn just as easily and probably more effectively on a playground as in a class setting, should be fun. And at this tender age, learning should come from doing, which is always how little ones learn best.
Chapter 14, The Ninth Month.
There just aren't enough waking hours in the day for a busy 8-month-old who's on the go, or attempting to be on the go. Baby's not only a mover and shaker, but a budding comedian who'll do anything for a laugh, and an avid mimic who delights in copying sounds you make. Warning, all sounds. And a born performer. And for an encore, I think I'll do another round of fake coughs. Always a crowd pleaser. That amazing noggin's starting to make sense of complex concepts that previously caused it to draw a blank, making for more sophisticated interactions and play. Case in point, object permanence. Mommy's not really gone when she peekaboos from behind a diaper. She's just goofing on me. But all this new maturity doesn't come only with more fun and games. It can also come with stranger anxiety. Once happy in just about any pair of cozy arms, many 8-month-old babies suddenly become pretty picky about the company they keep. Only mommy, daddy, and maybe a favorite sitter need apply.
Feeding your baby. Finger foods.
Has the novelty of feeding your baby pureed mush worn off already? You're not the only one fed up with spoon feeding. Your baby probably is too. Witness his willfully clenched lips, or the way she turns her head away just at the critical moment. Splat. Or how his pudgy hands intercept and overturn the spoon just before it reaches its destination. More splat. Happily, it's time to serve up a change and introduce a new utensil to the feeding mix, baby's fingers. Most eager beaver babies are able to trade in that spoon and trade up for finger foods by the time they're 7 to 8 months old. And once they discover that foods of all kinds can be transported to their mouths by hand and fingers, self-feeding becomes the name of the game, and ultimately, the only game in town. But the transition from spoon to fingers won't happen overnight. It's a process that can be messy and frustrating on both sides of the high chair. Even if your baby has spent much of his or her young life trying to take on the world by mouth, trying to figure out the mechanics of maneuvering food to mouth is challenging. Most babies start out by holding their food in their fists, not having learned yet to coordinate individual fingers for pickup and transport. Some learn to open the hand flat against the mouth, while others put their food down and pick it up again with more of it exposed. Strategies that can consume a lot of time, but often don't result in the consuming of much food. As your baby perfects the pincer grasp, usually between 9 and 12 months, his or her ability to hold smaller objects like peas and small pasta shapes between thumb and forefinger will improve, considerably expanding the menu and the amount of self-feeding that can practically be done.
Baby basics at a glance. Ninth month. Sleeping. Babies at this age sleep an average of 10 to 12 hours per night and take 2 naps during the day, each around 1.5 to 2 hours long, for a total of 14 to 15 hours each day. Eating. Breast milk and formula are still the most important part of baby's diet, but baby's taking in more and more solids each day. Breast milk. Your baby will nurse around 4 to 5 times a day. Some babies will nurse more often. Baby will be drinking somewhere between 24 and 30 ounces of breast milk a day, though as more solids are added to the diet, baby will drink less. Formula. Your baby will probably down 3 to 4 bottles a day, filled with 7 to 8 ounces of formula, for a total of 24 to 30 ounces per day. As more solids are added to the diet, baby will drink less. Solids. As baby becomes a more experienced eater, expect anywhere from 4 to 9 tablespoons of cereal, fruit, and vegetables each per day, spread out over 2 to 3 meals. As protein foods are added, baby may eat anywhere from 1 to 6 tablespoons of meat, chicken, fish, tofu, eggs, or beans per day. More grains, like quinoa or brown rice, and dairy products, cheese or yogurt, may also add protein to baby's repertoire. Playing. Baby will continue to play with toys that encourage pulling up to standing. Look for sturdy ones that won't tip over. Sorting and stacking toys, different colored foam blocks, for instance, or rings of different sizes. Toys with buttons, levers, and dials, like busy boards or activity cubes and tables. Toys that make sounds when baby presses a button or pulls on a short string. Balls, large and small, foam blocks, stuffed animals, and books. Toys that encourage language development, toys that talk or respond to words, are a nice addition at this age. Spice it up. Looking to spice up your baby's diet? Consider adding spices and herbs, such as cinnamon, nutmeg, basil, mint, and garlic, to baby's meals. Remember, if you're breastfeeding, your little one has already been experiencing the spicier side of life, thanks to the spiced up foods you eat.
Best finger foods. Which finger foods should you hand over to your baby? Look for consistency that can be gummed before swallowing or that will dissolve easily in the mouth. No chewing should be necessary, whether or not your little one has been visited by the tooth fairy. Start with foods that have been well received in pureed form on a spoon, serving them up in manageable cubes or chunks. Pea size for firmer items, marble size for softer foods. Good choices include whole grain bread, bagel or toast, rice cakes, or other crackers that become mushy when gummed. Cubes of whole grain French toast, waffles, or pancakes. Oat circle cereals, baby puffs. Tiny cubes of cheese or shredded cheese. Small cubes of tofu. Ripe avocado slices. Chunks of ripe banana, very ripe pear, peach, apricot, cantaloupe, honeydew, kiwi, and mango. Blueberries. Squish them first so they're not whole. Small chunks of cooked to tender carrot, white or sweet potato, yam, broccoli or cauliflower florets, and peas, cut in half or crushed. Flakes of baked or poached fish, but screen carefully for bones. Soft meatballs, cooked in sauce or soup so they don't get crusty. Small pieces of cooked chicken or turkey. Well-cooked pasta of various sizes and shapes. Break up before or cut after cooking as necessary. Well-cooked smashed beans and lentils. Scrambled or hard-cooked eggs. To serve finger foods, scatter 4 or 5 pieces onto an unbreakable plate or directly onto baby's feeding tray, and add more as baby eats them. Beginning eaters confronted by too much food, especially all in one spot, may respond either by trying to stuff all of it into their mouths at once or by sending it all to the floor with one high chair clearing swipe. A good reason to serve it up slowly. As with other foods, finger foods should be fed only to a baby who is seated and not to one who is crawling, cruising, or toddling around. Are those yummy, soft finger foods, that mango, that avocado, the tofu, slipping and sliding in your baby's pudgy fingers? Grind Cheerios or another whole grain cereal, wheat germ, or whole grain crackers into a fine powder, and then coat the foods with the dust. It will make it easier for your little one to grab hold of and munch on, plus it'll boost the health factor of the foods. moving up from the mushed. Finger foods shouldn't be the only new delicacies on your baby's menu. You can also start to add more texture to the food you spoon-feed your little one. You can turn to store-bought stage 3 foods or mashed baby's meals from what you serve the family. Instead of strained applesauce, consider serving the chunky variety. Serve smashed baked sweet potato instead of pureed. Spoon up thicker oatmeal instead of the thin baby kind. Think about mashed, small curd, whole milk cottage cheese or ricotta, scraped apple or pear, scraped tiny bits of fruit into a dish with a knife, mashed or coarsely pureed cooked fruit with the skin removed, apples, apricots, peaches, and plums, for example, and soft cooked vegetables, such as carrots, sweet and white potatoes, cauliflower, and winter squash. Watch out for strings from fruits such as bananas and mangoes, and vegetables such as broccoli, string beans, and kale, and sinew or gristly bits from meats. And be sure to check fish very carefully for bones that might be left after mashing.
Off the finger food menu. Because of the danger of choking, don't give your baby foods that won't dissolve in the mouth, can't be mashed with the gums, or can be easily sucked into the windpipe. Avoid uncooked raisins, whole peas, unless they're smashed, raw, firm-fleshed vegetables, carrots, bell peppers, or fruit, apples, unripe pears, grapes, and chunks of meat or poultry. Once the molars come in, the front teeth are for biting and don't improve your child's ability to chew. Somewhere around the end of the year, for early teethers, foods that require real chewing can be added, such as raw apples, grated or cut into very small pieces, and other firm-fleshed raw fruits and vegetables, small slices of meat and poultry, cut across the grain, and seedless grapes, skinned and halved. But hold off until age 4 or 5 on common choking hazards, such as raw carrots, popcorn, nuts, and whole hot dogs. Introduce them only when your child is chewing well. What you may be wondering about.
Loss of interest in nursing.
Whenever I sit down to breastfeed my son, he seems to want to do something else. Play with the buttons on my shirt, pull up on my hair, look at the TV, anything but nurse.
Remember the early months when your newborn's whole world seemed to revolve around your breasts? When his adorable mouth would root and pucker as soon as he caught a whiff of mama's milk? When nothing spelled bliss like being at your breast, cuddled in your arms, contentedly lapsing in and out of a sweet, sticky, smiley milk stupor? Well, that was then, and this is now. While there are plenty of babies who remain passionate about breastfeeding throughout the first year and significantly beyond, there are others who begin to get a little antsy at their once favorite milk station, starting somewhere around the 9th month. Some simply refuse the breast entirely, while others nurse seriously for a minute or two before pulling away, distracted by a passing shadow, the cat slinking by, a sudden urge to practice pulling up, maybe on mommy's hair, or just the realization that time spent cooped up in mama's arms is time not spent banging blocks, yanking cushions off the sofa, or otherwise being busy. Sometimes this baby breast boycott is just transient. Maybe your little one is going through a readjustment in his nutritional needs, especially if he's taking more solids. Or perhaps he's put off by the funky taste of your breast milk brought on by hormonal changes during your period, or by the garlic bread you toasted Friday night. Or maybe a virus or a bout of teething has him balking at breast business as usual. More likely, it's busyness that's keeping him from getting busy at the breast. With a world of distractions, breastfeeding faces a lot of compelling competition for his attention. What's not likely to be the cause of your baby's breastfeeding ban? Readiness for weaning. Even if he may think he's ready to move on, or at least move on to other more interesting activities, especially during the day, babies continue to do best on breast milk, supplemented with solids until at least their first birthday, when whole cow's milk in a cup can start standing in. And even then, many toddlers and their moms continue to make time in their busy schedules for breastfeeding, if mainly for the pure pleasure of it. So don't automatically wave the nursing scarf of surrender. Instead, stay focused on riding out this late-stage nursing strike, striking back with these tips. Try some peace and quiet. An increasingly curious 8 or 9 month old baby is easily distracted by the TV, even on mute, the sound of a text coming in, a passing siren, a dog barking next door, and of course, by just about any bright, shiny object. To maximize baby's concentration on breast business, nurse in a dimly lit, quiet room. Power off anything that might divert him, your phone included. Stroke him and cuddle him gently as he nurses to relax him. Nurse when he's sleepy. Breastfeed first thing in the morning before all his busy baby cylinders kick in. Breastfeed after a warm bath at night or after a relaxing massage or right before nap time. If he's tired enough, he might not mind breaking for breast. Or nurse on the run. Some babies prefer to know they're part of the action. That way they can be sure they're not missing something. If that's the case with your little bundle of energy, nurse while you're walking around the house. Securing baby in a sling will be easier on your arms. Baby's still not taking breastfeeding lying down or even sitting up. You can lead a baby to the breast, but you can't always make him drink, especially if he's emotionally ready to move on. If you've exhausted the options for winning him back over to breast, consider pumping at least some of his daily quota of breast milk and serving it up in a bottle. More work for you, but more freedom of movement for him. And that might be especially appealing during those extra wriggly times of the day. Save breastfeeding sessions for when he's mellow or too sleepy to put up a fight. He's never taken a bottle. No point in starting now. After all, the AAP recommends weaning from the bottle at 12 months anyway. Use a cup for breast milk. Just make sure he gets enough this way. If you do end up weaning to formula, try to do so gradually. Gradual weaning will allow baby time to increase his intake of formula before he gives up breast milk entirely. You can mix them to start. And it will give your breasts a chance to put the brakes on production slowly, which will help you avoid painful engorgement.
Not sitting still for bottles? Got a bottle baby who won't sit still for formula feeds? The same tips for nursing mamas apply to you too. Minimize distractions by bottle feeding in a quiet, dim room and when your little one seems most sleepy. Still not working? Consider switching to a cup during the day and bottles only in the morning when baby's still revving up and before bed when sleepiness is setting in. Or maybe more distractions are the ticket to better feeds. Try reading to your baby during feeds or hand over the bottle and let your baby hold it or hold it with you if you haven't already. A little control might win your little one over. Finally, be sure you're using the right size nipple for your older baby. A flow that's too slow can be frustrating and may lead to your baby giving up before he or she is done. Got cow's milk? Not yet. Your little one's growing and developing at an astonishing pace, but there's one milestone even the most advanced baby isn't ready to take on yet, the switch from breast milk or formula to cow's milk. That momentous transition should wait, advises the AAP, until a baby has turned 1 year old, at which point it's fine, with the pediatrician's go-ahead, for your little cupcake to chase down that birthday cupcake with a cup of whole milk. Most doctors will greenlight whole milk yogurt, cottage cheese, and hard cheese by 8 months or so, or even sooner, and some will even allow an occasional sip of whole milk before the first birthday, or a splash mixed in baby's cereal, but ask first. When it does come time to move on to cow's milk, serve up whole milk until the second birthday, unless the doctor has suggested transitioning instead to reduced fat milk, aka 2%.
Fussy eating habits.
When I first introduced solids, my daughter seemed to lap up everything I gave her. But lately,
It seems she won't eat anything but puffs. And if I'm lucky, a little banana.
So your baby's gone from open wide to clamp shut? That often happens once the novelty of spoon-fed solids and sitting still for them wears off. Happily, there's no need to worry about her suddenly picky ways for three reassuring reasons. First, healthy little ones who are allowed to eat to appetite tend to eat as much as they need to grow and thrive. Second, those nibbles typically add up faster than parents usually realize. Third, your baby is still getting the bulk of her nutrients from breast milk or formula. While a variety of solids help round out her nutritional requirements and new tastes and textures provide valuable eating experience, breast milk or formula can still pick up the slack. As she passes the 9-month mark and begins to close in on her first birthday, your baby's requirement for breast milk or formula will ultimately decrease, and solids will ultimately become the mainstay of her daily diet, a nutritional must-have instead of the nutritional gravy they are now. Even then, as long as she's getting the growing job done, you can leave stress about her solids intake, how much, which kind, off the menu. Instead, try these feeding strategies for pumping up your picky eater's nutritional intake, and maybe even have her opening wide to a wider range of foods. Let him eat bread, or cereal, or bananas, or whatever food she favors. Many babies and toddlers seem to be on a food of the week or month plan, refusing to eat anything but a single selection during that time. And it's fine to respect your little one's dietary preferences and aversions, even when taken to extremes. Cereal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, for example. Eventually, if given a chance to do so on her own, and if offered a wide variety of foods to choose from, your baby will expand her repertoire of tastes. But maybe not cake. Tiny tummies can handle only so much food, and let's face it, given a choice between filling up on cookies or steamed carrots, few babies will reach for the carrot. And really, would you? Offer only healthy foods, and your baby, and later toddler, will have no choice but to choose a healthy food every time, even if it's the same healthy food over and over again. Add on when you can. While you shouldn't push food on your baby, there's nothing wrong with trying to sneak it by her. Serve her cereal and slip in a serving of fruit in the form of a diced banana, applesauce, or cooked diced peaches. If it's bread your baby craves, spread it with mashed banana or smooth nut butter, or melt a thin slice of Swiss on it, or turn it into French toast. Or try baking and buying breads that incorporate other nutritious ingredients, such as pumpkin, carrot, cheese, or fruit. Offer what you're having. A side of cauliflower with that cereal? Sure, why not? Babies often clamor more for what their parents are eating, so offer, but never push, foods from your plate that she's developmentally ready for. Move up from mush. Your little one's pickiness may simply be her way of telling you that she's had it with the baby stuff. Changing to chunky foods and finger foods that are soft enough for her to manage, but intriguing enough in taste and texture to satisfy her maturing palate, may turn her from fussy to epicurious. Variety may spice things up too. Turn the tables. Perhaps it's just a newly emerging streak of stubborn independence that's keeping her mouth zipped at mealtime. Hand her the responsibility of feeding, and she may open her mouth eagerly to a wide range of food experiences she would never consider taking from the spoon you offer. Don't drown her appetite. Many babies and toddlers eat very little because they're drinking too much juice, formula, or breast milk. At this point, your baby should have no more than 24 to 30 ounces of formula a day. If you're breastfeeding, you don't know exactly how much milk she's taking, but you can be pretty sure that nursing her more than 4 or 5 times a day will rein on her appetite for solids. And don't drown her appetite by giving her juice. Wait until she's over a year to even introduce it. Attack snacks. Snacks play a big role when you're filling a little tummy. But they can also easily sabotage a baby's appetite for meals and suck parents into a snack cycle that's hard to break. Case in point, what do parents do when baby snubs breakfast? Ply her with snacks all morning, of course, which means she isn't likely to have any appetite for lunch. And what happens after lunch is turned down? Baby's hungry again in the afternoon. Snacking continues, and there's no room for dinner. So try to limit snacks to one in mid-morning and one in mid-afternoon. A bedtime snack can be added, too, as part of the nightly bedtime ritual, but it's not a must. Serve snacks seated for safety's sake, as well as to nix nonstop nibbling. Leave pressure off the menu. Do you tend to pull out all the pushing, prodding, pleading, and coaxing stops when your baby fusses at mealtime? Time to shut down the choo-choo train service and let your baby choose when to open the tunnel wide and when to clamp it shut. For your little one to grow up with healthy feelings about food, she needs to eat because she's hungry, not because you want her to, and stop because she's full. In other words, let her appetite call the shots, even when it's calling it quits after just a few bites. Self-feeding.
Every time the spoon comes near my baby, he grabs for it. If his bowl is near enough, he dips his fingers in and makes a mess trying to feed himself. He's getting nothing to eat, and I'm getting frustrated.
Your little one is dipping his sticky fingers into the bowl of independence. And unfortunately for your kitchen floor, the bowl of mashed squash, too. Let him. It's time to spoon up what he's hungry for. A chance to feed himself, or at least attempt to feed himself. Start by spooning up another spoon, one to call his own. True, he probably won't be able to do much more with his spoon than wave it around, and if he does manage to actually fill it up with food, he's likely to haul it up to his face upside down, or to come in for a landing closer to his nose than his mouth. But that's not the point at this point in his development. Being involved in his own mealtimes is, no matter how messy a proposition it becomes. Hopefully, wielding his own spoon will make him less grabby about yours. And busily occupied enough with his own challenging project, fill spoon, bring to the vicinity of the open mouth, that he may make your project of feeding him less challenging. Still missing the mark? Try offering him finger foods or a mesh feeder he can safely munch soft fruits and veggies from. To self-feed while you spoon-feed him in between his bites, or that you let him eat to his heart's content. After all, no need for purees if baby doesn't like them. If you do let him self-feed full-time, mealtimes will take longer and be messier, but just think of those splats and splatters as a learning experience. As in, you learn to spread a splat mat on the floor under baby's high chair before every meal. Remember, too, that for your baby, eating isn't just a matter of taste and nutrition, but of feeling food, smelling food, squishing food, and smearing food. That said, when self-feeding dissolves into all play and no eating, some play is part of the feeding game. Pick up the spoon and take over the meal. If your baby balks, it's time to wipe the carrots off his chin and the avocado from between his fingers and end the meal.
Stick with some cereal. Has your baby moved on from the strained and the bland to new and interesting tastes and textures? Good for your fledgling foodie. But in your excitement to encourage variety and adventure in the high chair, don't forget to include some iron-enriched cereal in your baby's daily diet. As ho-hum as it may be, it's the easiest way, unless your baby is formula-fed, of ensuring adequate iron intake, and it can be added to fruits, veggies, yogurt, and other cereals as well. Baby's not a cereal fan? No need to force the mush. Just make sure your baby is getting some iron-rich foods daily or a supplement.
Strange stools.
When I changed my baby's diaper today, I was really puzzled. Her bowel movements seem to be filled with grains of sand, but she never plays in a sandbox.
Just when you're getting bored with changing diapers, another surprise turns up in one. Sometimes it's easy to figure out what went into baby to produce the change in her poop. Halloween orange color? Probably the carrots. Frightening red? Maybe beets or beet juice. Black specks or strands? Bananas. Small dark foreign objects? Usually mashed blueberries or chopped raisins. Light green pellets? Perhaps peas. Yellow ones? Corn. Seeds? Very likely tomatoes, cucumbers, or melon from which the seeds were not completely removed. Because babies don't chew, they barely gum food before they swallow, and their digestive tracts are relatively short and not fully mature, what goes in often comes out largely unchanged in color and texture. Sandy stools, such as those in your baby's diaper, are fairly common, not because babies snack from the sandbox, though they will, given a chance, but because certain foods, particularly Cheerios and similar oat cereals and pears, often appear sandy once they've passed through the digestive tract. So before you panic at the sight of what's filling your baby's diaper, think about what's been filling her tummy. If you're still puzzled, take a picture to show or email or text the doctor. Still hairless.
Our daughter was born without hair and still barely has more than a light coating of peach fuzz. When will she get some hair?
Hair today, not always for babies this age, particularly those who are fair and destined one day to have light locks. Hair tomorrow, well, maybe day after tomorrow. Some cuties stay cue ball bare throughout the first year and often well into the second. Happily, hairlessness, like toothlessness, isn't permanent and doesn't predict a sparse hair supply later in life. While you're waiting for your sprout to sprout some hair, or at least enough to hold a barrette or two, look at the upside of slow-to-grow hair. Easier shampoos, no tears over tangles. Still toothless.
Our baby is almost 9 months old and still doesn't have a single tooth. What could be holding up his teething?
There are plenty of 9 months old who are all gums, and there are even a few who finish their first year without a single tooth to help them bite into their birthday cake. Though the average baby cuts a first tooth at 7 months, the range is from 2 months, occasionally earlier, to 12, sometimes later. Late teething is usually hereditary and is no reflection on your baby's development, though you can probably expect the second round of teeth to come in later too. Eventually, the tooth fairy comes to visit every baby, so enjoy these yummy gummy grins while you can. By the way, being toothless doesn't interfere with a baby's ability to move on to chunkier foods. First teeth are for biting down on food, not for chewing. Until molars make their appearance midway through the second year, your little one will use his gums for mashing up food. And it's the same process for tooth and toothless babies. And here's another bit of tooth trivia, and another example of the every baby is different rule. After the first pair, usually the bottom, but occasionally the top poke through, other pearlies may pop up relatively quickly, within weeks, or there may be a lull in teething that lasts months. That's normal too, and no reflection on your baby's development. Teething pain and night crying.
Our baby, who was sleeping through the night, has now started waking from teething pain. We don't want to let her cry, but we also don't want to encourage her waking. What should we do?
It's true, babies don't need a lot of encouragement to start or restart a night waking habit. A few nights of waking here, a few nights there, and bingo, sleeping through the night is just a distant dream. And that's what often happens when teething pain triggers night waking. The pain ends, the waking continues. How to break the cycle before it gains momentum and you lose sleep? Offer comfort by all means, but try to avoid starting a comfort habit that you prefer not to keep up indefinitely. Say feeding baby or bringing her into bed with you. Instead, keep comfort short, sweet, and not too addictive. A little padding, a soft lullaby, a teething ring, a quiet, it's okay, until she begins to drift off again. Pretty soon, she'll relearn falling back to sleep on her own when she wakes up during the night, and all of you will get a better night's sleep. If she seems to be in a lot of teething-related pain at night, ask her doctor about giving her a dose of baby acetaminophen or ibuprofen before she goes to bed. Also ask before applying numbing gel or giving homeopathic teething tablets. And check in with the doctor, too, if there seems to be any signs of illness, an ear infection, for example, that can get worse at night.
How to care for baby hair. Whether it's a few silky strands or a thick tangle of curls, the long and short of baby hair is that it comes attached to babies. And babies, especially active older babies, aren't known for their love of hair care. Shampoos? No thanks, I'd rather squirm. Comb outs? I think I'll pass. Brush and style? You're kidding, right? Fortunately, less is more when it comes to baby hair care. Here's how to get maximum grooming with minimum struggle. Shampoo only as needed. Define as needed. About 2 or 3 times a week is plenty, though you can clearly add an extra shampoo on those days when baby decides to try using a full bowl of oatmeal as a hat. Many babies, especially those with African hair or those with very dry hair, are best off with just a weekly shampoo. In between shampoo days, you can spray a little detangler on those smaller globs of stuck-on food and work them out with a wide-tooth comb. Protect those peepers. Even a no-tears shampoo can produce tears if it gets into your little one's eyes. Protect baby's eyes by holding a washcloth across his or her forehead when shampooing and rinsing. Or, for an older baby, use a shampoo visor to keep those peepers dry. Remember, a handheld nozzle offers more control when rinsing. A plastic watering can or cup can also do the trick if your tub doesn't have a nozzle. Don't tangle with tangles. Is your baby's hair tangle-prone? Untangle hair before beginning to shampoo to prevent even worse tangles afterward. Post-shampoo, pat hair gently dry instead of rubbing. Always untangle from the ends up, keeping one hand firmly on the roots as you work to minimize tugging. Go easy on products. Easy does it when you're trying to shampoo a squirming sweetie. So make the job as easy as possible by skipping the extra step conditioner. Use a conditioning shampoo or, for a tough case of tangles, a spray-on detangler. Choose the right tools. Think gentle when you select combs and brushes. Baby's got thick hair? A wide-tooth comb may make wet hair comb-outs easier and is a must-have for babies with extra thick, frizzy, or African hair. Tight, curly hair? A brush with long, firm, and widely spaced bristles is a good choice. Little hair there? Stick with a fine-tooth comb to tame those few strands. A soft baby brush or one with plastic-coated tips can also work for comb-outs on wet hair. Style safely. Let baby's hair air dry. Don't use a blow dryer on that sensitive scalp and those delicate tresses. Skip braids for now. And even if your baby girl is sporting a head full of hair, it's best to hold off on ponytails or pigtails. These styles can damage hair or even lead to patches of baldness. Clips or barrettes pose a choking risk if they're small enough or have small enough parts, which rules out many hair accessories designed for babies. If you do use a band, clip, or barrette, always remove it before putting baby down for a nap or bedtime. Make mirror magic happen. Most babies can't get enough of that baby in the mirror, even though they have no clue who that baby is. Distract your little one from the grooming at hand by performing it in front of a mirror.
Pulling up.
Our baby just learned to pull up. He seems to love it for a few minutes, but then starts screaming. Could standing be hurting him?
Now that he's figured out how to pull up, your baby may have a leg up. Make that 2 legs up on 2-footed mobility. Exciting until he realizes, as he does after just a few minutes, that he's all pulled up with no place to go and with no way of getting down. In other words, he's standing stranded, and that's frustrating stuff. Like most babies who've just learned to stand, he's stuck standing until he falls, collapses, or is held down. Cue the screaming. And that's where you come in. As soon as you notice frustration setting in, gently help him down to a sitting position. Slowly does it so that he can get the idea of how to do it himself, a skill he's likely to master within a few days to a few weeks. In the meantime, expect to spend a lot of time coming to the rescue of your stranded, standing sweetie. Calls for help may come, inconveniently, during the middle of the night, too, since many babies are so pumped about pulling up that they start practicing standing while they're supposed to be sleeping, and sometimes even when they're half asleep, leaving them stranded standing in their cribs in the wee hours. As you would during the day, rescue your standing man, tenderly helping him lie back down. Hopefully, he'll soon get the hang of plopping back down on his own. One fun way to practice pulling up and sitting back down is in your lap, especially enjoyable if you turn the practice into a silly game.
My baby is trying to pull up on everything in the house. She's excited about her accomplishment, but I'm a nervous wreck. How can I make sure that she's safe pulling up?
First, your baby took in the world from the secure cocoon of your arms. Then, from a variety of other relatively safe venues. Infant seat, swing, play yard. Then, on all fours. And finally, from 2 feet. Endlessly thrilling for her, and endlessly worrisome for you. Pulling up and coming soon, cruising, open up a whole new world for your little one, along with a whole lot of risks, from minor tumbles to major furniture toppling. Her job as a curious almost toddler is to explore this whole new world. Your job is to make sure she stays safe while she's at it. To help with that, start childproofing your home now that your baby's upwardly mobile. And don't forget that your baby's best defense is your vigilance. So make sure supervision is constant. And when it comes to judging her skills or her lack of judgment, always overestimate. To prevent slips and trips, be sure that papers, open books, and slippery magazines are not left lying around on the floor, and that spills on smooth surface floors are wiped up quickly. And to be sure her feet won't trip her up, keep her barefoot or in skid-proof socks or slippers rather than in smooth-soled shoes or slippery socks.
Not pulling up. Babies not pulling up or not reaching other milestones that the other babies you know are hitting? Don't worry. Your little one is probably busy perfecting other skills right now. He or she will likely get to it soon enough.
Flat feet.
My baby's arches look totally flat when he stands up. Could he have flat feet?
In baby feet, flatness, like cuteness, is the rule, not the exception. And it's a rule that you're not likely to find an exception to. There are several reasons. First of all, since young babies don't do much walking, the muscles in their feet haven't been exercised enough to fully develop the arches. Second, a pad of fat fills the arch, making it difficult to discern, particularly in chubby babies. And when babies begin to walk, they stand with feet apart to achieve balance, putting more weight on the arch and giving the foot a flatter appearance. Chances are that your baby's flat-footed look will slowly diminish over the years, and by the time he's finished growing, his feet will sport a well-formed arch. Around 20 to 30% of fully grown feet will end up flat, but that's not something that can be predicted now, or that would be considered a problem later.
Walking too early?
Our baby wants to practice walking all the time, holding on to our hands. Will walking before she's ready to do it on her own hurt her legs?
Your baby's next step on the road to walking, taking steps while holding on, may be a strain on your backs, but not on her legs. Babies have a knack for knowing when they're ready to take on a new skill. And when they're not ready, they'll let you know, say by staging a sit-down. If she's happy practicing her steps, her legs are happy too. Plus, assisted walking allows her legs to flex the same muscles she'll need to walk solo. And if she does it barefoot, she'll be strengthening her feet as well. Another reassuring FYI, despite what you might have heard, early walking, assisted or un, won't cause bowing, a standard characteristic of baby and toddler legs, no matter when those first steps are taken. So as long as your backs hold out, let her walk to her legs content, or let her try out a push toy. A baby who doesn't want to practice walking at this stage, of course, shouldn't be pushed into it. As with other aspects of development, just follow your half-pint-size leader. Slow to sit, slow to go.
Our baby has begun only recently to sit well by himself, and he hasn't started trying to get around either. Does that mean he'll keep lagging developmentally?
Maybe you've heard this one before, but maybe, like many parents, you need to hear it over and over again to help you shake those developmental doubts. Every baby is different, and every baby develops different skills at a different pace. Much of the timing for your one-of-a-kind cutie's development comes courtesy of his unique blend of genes, which are programmed with precision to determine when he'll master each skill. Chances are his development hasn't been, and won't be, uniform across the board. Most babies are faster in some areas and slower in others. One, for instance, may be speedy with social and language skills, smiling, saying words, but lagging in large motor skills, like pulling up. Another might walk, again, a large motor skill, by 9 months, but not finesse a pincer grasp, a fine motor skill, until after his first birthday. What's more, the rate at which motor skills, large or small, develop isn't related in any way to intelligence. Some brainy babies sit early, some sit late. While nature holds most of the developmental cards, nurture and circumstances can stand in the way of skills. That's definitely true of sitting. If your baby spent a lot of time on his back, buckled into an infant seat, or snuggled in a sling, he may not have had much of a chance to figure out how to get himself into a sitting position, and that could have slowed him down. Weight can also weigh on certain skills. A roly-poly baby may find rolling over more challenging than a lightweight one, while a baby on solid stems may find stability on 2 feet sooner than one on spindly legs. As long as development falls within the wide range considered normal and progresses from one step to the next, doing even most things later than other little ones is not usually a matter for concern. When a baby routinely reaches developmental milestones late, however, it's smart to check in with the doctor.
When in doubt, check it out. The doctor says your baby's development, while on the slow side, is still normal, but you still can't shake the nagging feeling that something's not quite right. Chances are, all's well within normal, and the best way to put those understandable fears to rest is to seek a referral to a developmental specialist. Occasionally, a pediatrician who sees babies only for brief evaluations can miss signs of abnormally slow development that a parent sees or senses, and that an expert doing a lengthier workup can pick up. A consultation with a specialist serves two purposes. First, if all checks out fine, worry can be checked. Second, if there does turn out to be a problem, early intervention can make a huge difference, often getting a slowly developing baby back on track. When in doubt, get it checked out.
Fear of strangers.
Our little girl used to be happy being held by anyone. Now she freaks out whenever someone new tries to be friendly, and she won't even let her grandparents come near her. What's going on?
Has your once pliable infant suddenly started taking a pass on Pass the Baby? Being antisocial with strangers may seem strange behavior for someone who's always gone happily to the nearest lap. But this social snubbery isn't snobbery. It's a sign of maturity, and it's perfectly normal at this stage of development. When your little one was younger, she was a lot less picky about the peeps she hung out with. Now that she's a tad older and a wee bit wiser, she's clued into the fact that mommy and daddy are the most important people in her life. Everyone else, even the grandparents she once adored, takes a back seat, and preferably, from her perspective, a seat as far away as possible. The official term for this phenomenon is stranger anxiety, and it can begin at 6 months or even earlier, though it usually peaks around 9 months or so. This sudden shyness and newfound clinginess will pass, and in time your daughter will realize that she doesn't have to choose between you and others. But until then, don't push her to be Miss Congeniality. You'll have much better luck and many fewer tears if you let her socialize at her own pace on her own terms. In the meantime, give family members and friends a heads up on what's going on in your little one's head, which will also help head off any hurt feelings. Tell them it's not personal. Your baby is just going through an anxious phase and needs time to warm up. Coach them on how to woo your cutie. For example, suggest that instead of trying to pick her up right away, they talk quietly and move closer at a snail's pace. You can also invite relatives and friends to play peekaboo with her, or entice her with a toy while you hold your baby on your lap, the place she feels safest. If that doesn't melt her resistance, be patient. Forcing her to come face to face with her anxiety and those strangers will only feed it. It'll be less stressful for everyone if you let your suddenly shrinking Violet decide when and where to open up. And eventually, she will. Comfort objects.
For the last couple of months, our baby has become more and more attached to his little monkey blanket. He even drags it around when he's crawling. Does needing a security object mean he's insecure?
Your baby is a little insecure, but he has his reasons. With independent mobility, whether in the form of crawling, scooting, cruising, or eventually walking, comes a realization that he's not just an extension of you and your arms, not just a part of the mommy and daddy package. He's his own separate little person who can separate or be separated from you at any time. Like many discoveries he's making right now, that epiphany is equal parts exhilarating and unsettling. How does he strike out on all fours without giving up the comforting security your two arms have always offered? Simple, by bringing along a friend. This comfort or transitional or security object, aka lovey, serves as a mommy or daddy substitute, a surrogate who can fill in as needed, say when he's busy playing and you're busy working. Usually the object is small and snuggly, an easy-to-clutch blanket or stuffed animal, though some babies latch on to something less obvious, like a cloth diaper, a washcloth, a t-shirt, or even a decidedly uncuddly toy. Some comfort objects come and go, others are clung to for years. Often little ones give up their security blankets or toys by the time they're 2 to 5 years old, though a few children end up attached through the school years, and possibly even toting their tattered friend to college, discreetly, of course. Parting with a lovey, whether by choice or by necessity, as when it disintegrates into a pile of threads or puffs of cotton, is often tough, but sometimes barely noticed. For now, let your baby have the security he craves. No need to set limits on its use except for safety's sake. Blankets and stuffed animals don't belong in cribs. And practicality. Blankets and stuffed animals aren't so cuddly when they've been dunked in the tub. Also, for everyone's comfort, consider these comfort object policies. Keep it clean. This is easier to do if you start from the early stages of your baby's devotion. Wash the object often before he becomes just as attached to its smell as he is to its sight and feel. Can't pry his fingers off his monkey lovey during waking hours? Wash it while he's asleep. Save a spare. invests in a duplicate lovey or two to keep in reserve and swap it for the original whenever you need to wash one so that they wear evenly. Plus, now you have a backup in case the unthinkable happens. The lovey is inadvertently dropped at the mall, never to be seen again. Heap on the love. Bring on the cuddles and snuggles as much as possible so your little one gets the comfort and attention he needs from you. But don't worry that his love of his lovey is a sign that he's not getting enough love from you. It's just that he needs a little something-something on the side. Some babies never latch onto a comfort object of any kind, or even a comfort habit of any kind, and that's normal too.
When crib slats become foot traps. Baby arms, hands, feet, and legs are sweet as can be. Not so sweet is when those luscious limbs get stuck in between the crib slats. It happens to some babies more than others, usually it's the wriggly ones, and it happens more often as little ones get bigger, more active, and more curious. Often, babies are able to free their limbs on their own, and sometimes they'll cry to be freed. Usually, it just takes a little help from a grown-up friend. But once in a while, a knee, thigh, arm, or elbow gets wedged in so tightly that there's no easy way out. If that happens at your home, a little lotion or oil can help you and your baby out of a tight spot. Thinking of putting up bumpers to keep the crib slats from trapping those baby parts? There are two good reasons not to. For one, bumpers won't always prevent babies' legs from getting caught. Babies active enough to move around the crib are usually strong enough to kick bumpers off or get wedged between the slats above the bumper. For another, the AAP recommends keeping bumpers out of cribs altogether, even once baby's older. Bumpers, like soft bedding and pillows, have been shown to increase the risk for sleep-related deaths, including SIDS, entrapment, and suffocation. So keep the bumpers out of the crib and keep this reassuring message in mind. While it's possible for a baby to get an arm or a leg stuck between crib slats, it's virtually impossible to break a limb by doing so, which means that the experience will be, at worst, uncomfortable and upsetting, but certainly not life or limb threatening. All about games babies play.
Babies love to play games, especially when someone else, you, is in on the fun. But Peekaboo and This Little Piggy do more than just bring squeals of delight and entertain. They also improve socialization skills and teach important concepts such as object permanence, Peekaboo, coordination of words and actions, the Itsy Bitsy Spider, Patty Cake, counting skills, 1, 2, buckle my shoe, and language skills, eyes, nose, mouth. Chances are that even if you haven't heard a nursery game in decades, many of the ones your parents played with you will come back to you now that you're a parent yourself. If they don't, ask for a replay, A Parent Never Forgets, or turn to Google or your message board buddies. Here are a few that might ring a baby bell. Peekaboo, the classic of all classics. Cover your face with your hands, the corner of a blanket, a piece of clothing, a menu in a restaurant, or by hiding behind a curtain or the foot of the crib, and say, "Where's Daddy?" Then uncover your face and say, "Peekaboo, I see you." An alternative version, say peekaboo when you cover your face, "I see you" when you uncover it. Either way, be ready to repeat and repeat until you collapse. Most babies have an insatiable appetite for this game. Patty Cake or other clapping games. There are plenty of variations on clapping games, and babies are fans of each and every one. How to play? Put your baby's hands in yours and try bringing them together in a clapping motion. At first, your baby's hands will probably not open wide enough to clap, and for little fist suckers may end up in the mouth. But in time, the ability to hold the hands flat will finally come, probably not until the end of the year. Until then, you can do the clapping and the singing, of course. Clap to that time-honored favorite, Patty Cake. Patty Cake, Patty Cake, baker's man, bake me a cake as fast as you can. Mix it and pat it and mark it with a B and put it in the oven for baby and me. Or substitute baby's name, as in, and mark it with a C and put it in the oven for Caitlin and me. Or add a hiding game to the clapping by singing, clap your hands, 1, 2, 3, play a clapping game with me. Now your hands have gone away, find your hands so we can play. Or you can try clapping baby's feet for a change of pace. And don't forget a chorus of yay at the end of each round. The Itsy Bitsy Spider. Use your fingers, the thumb of one hand to the pointer finger of the other, to simulate a spider climbing up an invisible web and sing, the itsy bitsy spider went up the water spout. And then use your fingers to imitate rain falling and continue, down came the rain and washed the spider out. Throw your arms up and out for, out came the sun and dried up all the rain. And then back to square one, the spider goes back up the web and you end with, and the itsy bitsy spider went up the spout again. You can hold baby's hands while you play too. This little piggy. Take baby's thumb or big toe and start with, this little piggy went to market. Move on to the next finger or toe. This little piggy stayed home. And the next, this little piggy had roast beef, or if you're a vegetarian, pasta. Fourth finger, this little piggy had none. As you sing the final line, and this little piggy cried wee, wee, wee all the way home. Run your fingers up baby's arm or leg to under the arms or neck, gently tickling all the way. If your baby doesn't like tickling, just use a stroking motion instead. Expect endless squeals from your little piggy. So big. Ask, how big is baby? Or use your child's name, the dog's name, or a sibling's name. Help your baby spread his or her arms as wide as possible and exclaim, so big. Eyes, nose, mouth. Take both baby's hands in yours, touch one to each of your eyes, then both to your nose, then to your mouth, where you end with a kiss, naming each feature as you move along. Eyes, nose, mouth, kiss. Nothing teaches these body parts faster. Ring around the rosy, baby edition. Make this preschool favorite baby-friendly by adapting it for the lap. Hold your baby in a standing position on your lap and sing, ring around the rosy, a pocket full of posies, ashes, ashes, we all fall down. At which point you help him or her plop down to sitting. A variation is to substitute hopscotch, hopscotch for ashes, ashes, and to pop your lap and baby up at each one. You can also play a traditional ring around the rosy while holding baby in your arms, standing and turning in a circle before plopping down on the floor together. 1, 2, buckle my shoe. When climbing stairs or counting fingers, sing 1, 2, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, close the door. 5, 6, pick up sticks. 7, 8, close the gate. 9, 10, start again. Pop goes the weasel. You can turn slowly in a circle with baby if you're standing, or rock him or her back and forth if you're seated as you sing. All around the mulberry bush, the monkey chased the weasel. The monkey thought it was all in fun. Then, pop goes the weasel, as you gently bounce baby with the pop. Once baby is familiar with the song, wait a moment or two before the bounce and the punchline to give him or her a chance to do the popping. Remember, a baby's reaction time is likely to be delayed a few beats to allow for processing.
Chapter 15, The 10th Month.
The only thing about baby that might be slowing slightly this month is appetite. At least any appetite for sitting out long stints in the high chair. Most babies on the go would much rather explore the living room and the kitchen and the hallway closet than the high chair tray. Like any good explorer, babies determined to reach previously uncharted territory, which often means doing some climbing. Unfortunately, the ability to climb up comes long before the ability to climb back down, often leaving baby stranded. Baby understands no, but may just be starting to test your limits by defying it, or may already be a master at tuning the word out. Memory improves, and fears, which go hand in hand with increased cognitive skills, aka smarts, begin to multiply. For instance, of the vacuum cleaner, the lawnmower, or the blender. Not so smooth if you're a fan of smoothies.
Feeding your baby. Eating well for beginners.
During the first few months of life, your little one's nutritional needs were fully filled with mama's milk or formula. Then solids were added to the menu, though really any you were able to shovel into that sweet smiley mouth were just gravy, make that sweet potatoes, served up more for the experience of eating than for covering any nutritional bases. Those were still conveniently covered by the liquids in baby's diet. Now, that's about to change. After all, once your baby's first birthday rolls around, most nutritional requirements should be served up by sources other than the bottle, cup, or your breast, even if you plan to continue breastfeeding into the second year and beyond. Happily, feeding your little one well will still be pretty easy. A lot easier than it may be once he or she realizes you can get fries with that, and chips, and candy. It won't take much to spoon up the best for your baby in the months to come. Don't bother worrying about serving sizes or numbers of servings. Instead, provide a variety of healthy foods and a fun, relaxed mealtime atmosphere, one where pushing and prodding are never featured on the menu. Then sit back and watch healthy eating happen, and a future of healthy eating habits take shape.
Baby basics at a glance. 10th month. Sleeping. Your little snoozer will be sleeping an average of 10 to 12 hours per night and taking two naps during the day, each around an hour and a half to 2 hours long, for an average total of around 14 hours each day. The good news? Nearly 75% of babies are sleeping through the night by now. If yours is still part of the 25% and you're ready to move on to sleep teaching, see our chapter on sleep in the 6th month. Eating. Breast milk or formula is still the most important part of baby's diet, but solids are beginning to take on more significance, so try to make them count nutritionally. Breast milk. Your baby will nurse around 4 times a day. Some babies will breastfeed more often. Total intake will still tally up at somewhere between 24 and 30 ounces of breast milk a day. Though as more solids are added, baby will drink less. Formula. Your baby will probably drink 3 to 4 bottles a day, filled with 7 to 8 ounces of formula, for a total of 24 to 30 ounces per day. Some babies drink less formula more often. As more solids are added to the diet, baby will drink less, closer to the 24-ounce mark. Solids. Baby will probably lap up around 1/4 to 1/2 cup each of grains, fruit, and veggies every day, or twice a day if your baby's a big eater, 1/4 to 1/2 cup of dairy foods per day, and 1/4 to 1/2 cup of protein per day. Don't worry if your baby isn't following these measurements precisely. In fact, as long as baby is gaining weight and is happy and healthy, there's no need to get caught up in measurements at all. Playing. Time to bring out the push toys. Look for ones that are sturdy and won't tip over. And riding toys, wide, low-to-the-ground ones, such as a tot-sized car or fire truck on wheels, as well as any other playthings that encourage physical development. Play tunnels to crawl through, large balls to roll, stacks of pillows that baby can climb over. Tap into your baby's creative side by providing musical toys, toy keyboard, xylophone, drums, bells, and rhythm sticks, and maybe even an art supply or two. Experiment with a large, chunky crayon and a big sheet of paper to see what your pint-sized Picasso can do. And now that baby's brain is getting more and more sophisticated, he or she will squeal with delight at toys that bring surprises. Where did the ball roll to? Blocks, activity cubes, and tables, and stuffed animals are still favorites also. And the way baby plays with them is becoming more sophisticated. Stacking toys and shape sorters, too. Just don't expect your little one to finesse either yet without your help. Bring baby to the table.
baby's feeding schedule and your own don't quite match up yet, early bird specials not really your style, or you haven't managed to figure out how to spoon yogurt into your baby's mouth and salad into yours without mixing up the two. Until your little eater's an accomplished self-feeder, you may want to continue serving his or her main meals separately from yours. But that doesn't mean baby can't sit in on your meals, if only for a serving of sociability, and maybe a pile of shredded cheese or a slice of avocado. So when you can pull it off, pull your baby's high chair tableside while you're eating. Provide a sippy or straw cup of water and an unbreakable bowl or plate, one that can't be upended, and spoon and a few finger food selections. Include baby in the conversation and maybe an occasional round of peekaboo with your napkin. But don't feel like you're obligated to perform dinner theater. It's your turn to eat. And for your romance's sake, reserve some tables for two. Two parents, that is.
Healthy baby eating. Babies are all over the appetite map at this stage of the game, when eating is still more for practice and pleasure than for filling nutritional requirements. Some babies eat a lot all the time. Some eat very little most of the time. Others eat like a mouse one day and a horse the next. Some are varied and adventurous eaters,